On today's episode of The Good Word, Tim McMahon of ESPN joins us to discuss all things Luka Doncic on his return to Dallas for the LA Lakers. We're going to talk everything Western Conference, and we're going to talk how big of a threat are the Lakers in the Western Conference. All that and more coming up right now. Welcome to The Good Word. My name is Vincent Goodwill, senior NBA reporter for Yahoo Sports. A bit of business before we get into the show today. We are on YouTube, so don't forget to rate, review, subscribe to us there, as well as all the places you consume your audio podcast. My man, Tim McMahon, is joining us today. Tim McMahon, of course, ESPN NBA writer, author of The Wonder Boy, Luka Doncic, and The Curse of Greatness. Don't forget to go and get that wherever you can get your books. My man, Tim, what's going on?
Howdy, partner. I appreciate you having me, Vinny. It is, I'm not going to lie, it's not always good to see you, but I do appreciate you having me. I'm going to see you this week in Dallas, though.
You're going to see me this week in Dallas. And Tim, you know what we do during the playoffs. We see each other like every other day, you know.
Yeah,
like,
are you going to be West a lot this year? Are you going to be bouncing around?
West in all likelihood, because that's where, unfortunately, Tim, West is where all the storylines are. West is where LeBron and Steph and your guy, Luka, that's where they all reside. So, yeah, my body's going to be jacked for the next, like, 2.5 months. Tim, I was reading your book for the past day or so. I don't like to give you compliments, but that was good. Like, it was really, really, really good. No, Tim, like, the amount of... I'm curious, even before we get into it, how long was it that you knew you were writing this book? Because the amount of research that you went into before Luka came to the NBA, I felt like you had to be sitting on this or prepping this for at least a few years.
Well, Vinny, one, I am just, my heart's going to flutter with the praise from you, the compliments. That's very sweet of you. I've never known you to be a sweet fella. No, but this has been in the works since the 21-22 season. That's when I agreed to the deal. And, you know, I didn't want to do like a traditional biography on a guy who hasn't even hit his prime yet.
Right.
And so when I was approached about the possibility of it, I said, hey, the book I would like to write would be about the pressure on a franchise when they draft a prodigy through the prism of Luka and the Mavericks, the build it or they might leave thing that Oklahoma City went through with Kevin Durant, that Cleveland went through with LeBron James. You know, we can go on and on that New Orleans went through with Anthony Davis. You know all the names on that list. And so, you know, it is a story about this fascinating generational talent, one of the most talented players I've ever seen, the most talented player in Mavericks history.
Yeah.
Which, I trust me, I know who Dirk is. Dirk would agree with that statement, by the way. And so there's, you know, you got to get into the backstory of how he became, you know, the most accomplished European team prospect ever, why he was still drastically underestimated by the league. He didn't go first. He didn't go second. A third team passed on him, allowing the Mavericks to move up after they tanked like hell to get him, to move up a couple spots to land him. And then, you know, frankly, just all the drama and dysfunction that predated him in Dallas and continued in various iterations throughout his tenure in Dallas. And I'll be honest with you, there was a lot of that time that I thought the ending might be a Luka trade. I just never imagined it would be because the Mavericks, after succeeding in the mission of building a contender around him, decided to dump him. Never imagined that would be the case.
I don't think anybody did. And it's funny, like, there's so many things that you touched on there that I really want to get to. The first thing that I really want to talk to you about, because I feel like I didn't realize this initially, that he left home at such a young age. Tim, I wonder if you view him through the prism of like a child prodigy, like a musician or someone like that. Do you think that contributes to some of the things that people are saying, oh, Luka has bad habits, almost in a way that he needs like an escape from all of the pressure that he's had to endure since he was, 9 or 10 years old, when people realized that this guy is going to be a professional basketball player and leaving home and making the decision to leave home? I would imagine that's a lot of pressure all the time.
You know what? I don't think the pressure to perform really phases Luka, because here's what I always say about Luka. He loves the stage but mm-hmm. not the fame, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
He loves being out on that 94-foot, you know, hardwood, being the center of attention, entertaining, competing, everything that goes along with that. I think he could do without all the fame, and maybe there's some pressure that comes along with that. But, you know, I've had people close to him even compare him to like a Justin Bieber in the sense of just like you're saying, he didn't really have an adolescence. He sacrificed his adolescence to go to Real Madrid, you know, where he was a pro, like a full blown top level pro at 16. He's practicing yep. with the top team. It's like the Lakers of Europe, essentially
yep.
at 15. But at 13, you know, he's living in the dorm. He's part of this, you know, professional basketball machine at that age. And he did give up his adolescence. So in some ways, I think you can say that he's almost frozen in that adolescence where he didn't have the chance to have kind of a natural maturation process. And look, that's not unique to Luka. There's a lot of guys from Europe who do it. And honestly, I think the way that basketball is going in America now, where so many of these kids now, they're not going to, you know, the high school down the street. They're not playing with the buddies that mm-hmm. they grew up with. You know, they're going to these basketball factory prep schools. I do think you're starting to see some of that, but there's no question. And the other thing is, I think that's part of why he is so loyal and so fiercely committed to the Slovenian national team. Mm-hmm. One, and I wrote a chapter just on the Slovenian national team because I do think it illustrates this guy does have a strong natural sense of loyalty.
Mm-hmm.
So I would always say I don't think he was ever going to look for reasons to leave Dallas. There was a time I thought those reasons were going to basically punch him in the eye.
Right.
Not what ended up happening, but playing for Slovenia, it's a chance to kind of recapture his childhood or his adolescence, you know, being with people who speak the same language, who eat the same foods, you know, who just, it's almost like a summer camp.
Yeah,
every summer being able to be with his guys from the Slovenian national team. And he's not a case by case guy, like almost every other superstar in the NBA. If he can walk, even if he's fresh off the finals on a bum knee and just having to get shots to get through finals games, he's going to play for the Slovenian national team. And by the way, the fact he played for him at all when he had a Spanish passport, he was essentially an international free agent playing in Spain. There was all kinds of talk in the media about it. And it was not something he ever considered. He's Slovenian, so he was going to play for his homeland.
Are you saying he refused to pull a Joel Embiid in the Olympics? Is that what you're saying, Tim?
Yeah. No. But there was all this talk about Spain, even about Serbia, because he's got Serbian descent. These are established powers. But yeah, Embiid. Nah, he wasn't playing for Cameroon.
No,
he was going on a little recruiting tour, right? And he was. I don't know if Embiid can never go back to Paris. By the way,
no, mad. Nah. If he can, he better have some people with him, like that sort of thing. He better have people in his front and his back. Tim, it's funny, like when I was reading the book, like, of course, you've been covering Luka since the day he arrived. And you mentioned he wasn't even viewed as like a number one pick. Like, I remember talking to Gar Foreman, who was the Bulls GM at the time.
Mm-hmm.
And he was telling me about this Doncic kid. And the way he profiled him, it sounded like he was talking about Ricky Rubio, like a bigger Ricky Rubio, like, wait, you're telling me he can't shoot, but he's a good passer and he can't blow by anybody. Like, what are we doing here? So whenever he would say, did you see Luka scored 35 last night? Like, he would say that in the months leading up to the draft. He would just say that walking out of the Bulls locker room. Like, there wasn't this great hype from a media standpoint. Like you just said, it wasn't this push to get, hey, there's this international sort of transcendent player that's coming to the NBA. It was almost like, this guy's got to prove it because we've seen all these European stiffs come into the league and not fulfill it. Like how much did that luck play a part in Dallas even landing Luka?
Oh, huge. And look, Luka, just to be clear, the EuroLeague is by far the best league in the world outside of the NBA.
Yep.
He won MVP, Final Four MVP at the age of 18.
Mm-hmm.
He was the co-star of a EuroBasket championship team at 17 years old, outshining guys like Kristaps Porzingis, who was an all-star in the NBA already. mm-hmm. in elimination games. Goran Dragic was the MVP, but Luka was the co-star of that team. And just to put that in perspective, it's like if there was a tournament of all the states in America and Idaho won it. Slovenia has 2.1 million people. It's a tiny little country.
Right.
So he was the most accomplished European team prospect ever, but there were a bunch of questions about him. What position is he? I had an executive with a team that was in the upper half of the lottery say, yeah, he's going to be a good player. You know, he might make a couple all-star games. You know, Hedo Turkoglu was the comp that they gave me. You know, big playmaking forward.
Right.
He's not quick enough to bring the ball up the floor to be your primary ball handler. You know, he started out his career in Dallas as a small forward. Didn't last very long. They gave him the keys pretty quickly. But there was all this doubt. And honestly, there was the intel about the stuff that led to Nico Harrison making the shocking decision to trade the guy who was a 5-time first team All-NBA selection at the age of 25. Just took you to the finals. But the diet, the conditioning, the discipline, all that stuff, that goes back to pre-draft. And it's been, you know, something that there've been issues with that throughout the course of his career. So he's the most accomplished European team prospect ever. He was also drastically misevaluated, including, the Phoenix Suns had just hired Igor Kosovkov, who coached the Eurobasket champion Slovenian national team. And gave him zero say in the draft process. He finally said to Robert Sarver, hey, I've got to get this off my chest. Literally on the day of the draft. And he laid out the plan. You draft this kid. He's special. Sign Clint Capella to a massive offer sheet. The Rockets aren't going to match. He would have been right, by the way. Luka, Booker, rim running big. That's the core. Nope, it was DeAndre Ayton. It wasn't like a controversial pick.
No, it wasn't.
It was Arizona alum Robert Sarver picking the guy from Arizona as well. Yep. And then the real, listen, nobody is a bigger Balkan basketball legend than Vlade Divac. Drazen Petrovic, but he's all Balkan all time. Knew Sasha Doncic, Luka's dad, for decades and decades. I saw he was sitting with him at the LA, in LA the other day. But he knew too much. He knew too much of the negative intel, and he misevaluated him. He drafted Marvin Bagley III and said on draft night, he's a better player and a better fit. You know, okay. And then, the Hawks, it was Luka Trey. They had Luka higher, but they felt like getting that extra lottery pick was more than enough justification to make the swap. And look, Trey Young's had a heck of a career too, but you're not going to find a single GM in the league, at least outside of maybe one in Dallas. If you pull 29 GMs, none of them are taking Trae Young over Luka Doncic right now.
Look, I don't even think Nico would take Trae Young over Luka Doncic right now.
Defense wins championships is the first thing he told me when they made the trade. So I don't think he's taking Trae either.
No, it's amazing. Like you said, the Ayton thing to some level almost strikes of like Greg Oden, Kevin Durant, where you take big because you feel like big wins no matter what, especially over a 6'11 shooting guard, so to speak, which is what Kevin Durant was coming out of Texas, or a 6'9 dude that you cannot evaluate. There is no archetype for Luka Doncic. I always called him a souped up Jason Kidd when he played faster, like before he became James Harden. I was like, no, he's like Jason Kidd, except he's far more offensively inclined. And ironically enough, Jason Kidd became his coach and that, unlocked some stuff. But Timmy, in reading the book, he had a full career in Dallas before he ever got traded. He's a young player, but you think of the Carlisle stuff, the Cuban stuff, Porzingis, Brunson, like all these different agents and elements of a career. That's like a 10-year career that it was packed into a very condensed period of time. Was there anything when researching the book and doing it that you're like, man, I forgot that I lived through this, let alone Luka lived through this?
Well, and writing this book, like you really start putting together just all the twists and turns and dysfunction and drama and the Game of Thrones episode that played out in his early years in Dallas, that he was a very small part of all of this stuff, right? This is stuff that's playing out in the top levels of the organization, Cuban on down and Donnie Nelson versus Bob Vulgaris, Carlisle going nuts in a team meeting a week into Luka's career, essentially losing the team, cracking the foundation of his relationship with Luka, becoming increasingly paranoid that Jamal Mosley was gunning for his job. Mosley's trying to save the ship. And the Porzingis trade, which, dude, that, I can't tell you how popular that deal was when they made it. And you're thinking, wow, Dirk's about to exit stage left, and he's passing the torch to not one, but two guys who are going to, be among the greatest Europeans ever. It was just such a storyline deal. But, for a wide variety of reasons that we get into in the book, the trade didn't pan out. And there's relationship stuff there. There's coaching issues. There's injury. I also think Porzingis and Luka both had to mature.
Yeah.
And I've said it many times, and it's crazy the way things work out, where Porzingis coming back from injury plays his critical role in the finals and before getting hurt again, unfortunately. But I don't think Porzingis has a success in Boston, especially in that role, unless he endured the disappointment in Dallas and basically getting dumped by the Mavericks. I mean, it was a salary dump where the Mavericks gave up a second round pick to get rid of him. Mm-hmm. And I think to Porzingis's credit, he evaluated, that experience, his role in it. And he's better for it now. And he's obviously a critical part of a championship team and has a chance to be a huge part of a dynasty there. In Boston, the Brunson situation. I mean, just literally from the signing of his rookie contract, the Mavericks bungled that from start to finish.
To
lose the second best player on a Western Conference Finals team what a draft class. Luka and freaking Brunson in the same draft class and Antetokounmpo. Oh, wait, that was Kostas, not Giannis.
Wrong one. No, they didn't draft Giannis. They didn't draft Giannis, even though the scouting, was it Donnie Nelson wanted Cuban to draft Giannis because he was like, hey, give this young man 3 square meals a day, you're going to see something. Mm-hmm. And he was like, nah, I'd rather save this $500,000 or whatever it was on. Yeah. That was amazing.
He signed Dwight Howard, which didn't happen.
Yeah,
I mean, there's just so much stuff with the Mavericks. But to be able to recover from the Porzingis trade being a dud, from bungling the Brunson situation. They lucked into Kyrie when that was controversial.
Yep.
But because of the controversy, they were able to get him when they didn't have a lot of assets.
Mm-hmm.
Still had to tank that year to keep their top 10 protected pick. And then last year, Lively, P.J. Washington, Gafford, and they had it. They went to the finals. Was it a competitive series? No. But you had this superstar going into his prime. Yep. You surrounded him with the complementary pieces that fit. The relationship with Kyrie clicked, and then the Mavericks decided to punt on it.
So, look, we're going to talk about the game on Wednesday. I think that's going to be a fascinating place. That's why I'm going to walk in with you so that I won't get like accosted or anything like that. You're going to be a personal security. So before we get there, I want to talk about.
Well, listen, brother, I would recommend finding somebody else because you might get hit with some shrapnel that's not intended for you if you walk in with
They're
me.
They're not burning you an effigy.
There were F. Tim McMahon chants at the protest before AD's debut. I'll tell you that.
I remember
there
that.
Also don't buy the book chants.
I remember that. No, screw that. No, buy the book. Give Tim McMahon more money. No, I want to talk about what we saw from the Lakers yesterday. We're going to get back to more of the book and what we're going to see on Wednesday. Luka looked like he was, after having maybe his worst game as a Laker a few nights before, he looked like the dude who destroyed the Thunder in last year's Western Conference semifinals yesterday, like spearheading that. LeBron took a backseat, like Luka's playmaking, spraying it around to shooters, hitting 15 threes in the first half, blowing out the Thunder on the road. Do you think that means more for the Lakers and Luka, maybe from a confidence standpoint and a, hey, we can walk into that building and beat them and they haven't proven anything? Or do you look at it like Oklahoma City? They still have more to prove in terms of the fear factor. Or do you look at it as a regular season game with last week of the regular season and you got another opportunity in another night to rectify that?
Well, listen, we all understand that the Thunder, a lot of people won't believe it until they see it.
Yep.
And you don't show that in early April. Those are a late May and June kind of conversation. And they haven't been to late May or June yet. I do believe they will be. I do believe they're going to have multiple cracks at it. But, you know, when I believe that about the Thunder when it was KD and Russ and James Harden, we know how that played out. So the Thunder, you know, they're going to have to earn their respect, regardless of the fact they're going to have the best point differential in NBA history. But to me, it's more about the Lakers, and it's about a group that it's still very new. They have not had a lot of time together. Luka, it was really, honestly, it was very impressive to me how much they were winning when Luka was clearly in kind of a training camp mode, you know, coming back off the longest injury absence in his career, you know, getting over the emotional devastation of being dumped in the middle of the night, you know, being completely blindsided and backstabbed. No idea it was coming. You know, new team, new circumstances, new everything. And he wasn't himself for a while. We have seen, including Sunday afternoon in Oklahoma City, multiple glimpses of that dude, Luka. We still haven't seen a full, what I call full-blown Luka performance in a Lakers uniform. I mean, listen, we all know this guy can put up a 50-point triple-double.
Easy. Like,
we've seen the stat line. We've seen, it's not we think he can. We've seen him do it on multiple occasions. And we still haven't seen that guy. I wouldn't bet against it. And I wouldn't bet against it coming, you know, come playoff time. I do think Oklahoma City comes out of the West, just to be clear. But the Lakers are a real threat. You know, LeBron coming back off the injury. You know, the one thing, there was a lot of talk, oh, Luka, LeBron, how are they going to share the ball? Dude, this is the best thing that could happen to LeBron.
Yes.
Just like Kyrie last year. Hey, man. Luka is going to carry the load for most of the time. You kind of get in where you fit in. You run. You're going to get some, you know, as LeBron said, QB1's going to deliver to wide receiver one. Luka's the best look-ahead passer in the game. And you're going to have energy. You're going to have fresh legs come the fourth quarter, which Kyrie was such a great closer last year. I think LeBron can, you know, we've seen him fill that role. And they're two of the smartest players to ever play the game. Like, the fit was not going to be a problem. Yeah. You know, I said early on, fitness is a concern for Luka, but fit with LeBron, no. And I think, you know, the fitness is getting better. And I'll be honest, I don't think the Lakers are a real deal contender for another transaction cycle or two.
Right.
They need they need a real big. They need a real rim-protecting, rim-running big. And I think they get that this summer at the latest before next trade deadline. But they're going to have at least two of the three best players in every playoff series, you know? So like, they're going to have a chance in every playoff series.
Dude, that would be terrifying. Like, for one, Oklahoma City is the only team that I thought would have enough perimeter defenders that are big enough and long enough that can keep your number one scorer from having to guard one of their three guys. Like, you can hide Shai Gilgeous-Alexander if you want to. You can put him on Austin Reeves, but you can hide him somewhere else. That's why in my head, I was like, Oklahoma City has the personnel where you could put Lu Dort on one of those guys, and you could put J-Dub on one of those guys, and you can feel reasonably comfortable even when you pull my man Elmer Fudd off the bench. You know what I mean? Alex Caruso. You can feel reasonably comfortable with your perimeter defense that you're not compromised. Yesterday, they just basically said, screw that strategy. We're going to hit threes. We're going to compromise everything. I don't think I've ever seen Oklahoma City this year look so disheveled and confused defensively. Like, that's the thing. If Luka gets it going, they've got the shooters to make this thing really interesting. They don't have the bigs, but they got the shooters.
And Luka will tell, I think he said it again last night, like, Lu Dort is one of the defenders, like Luka's said over and over again, he's a top three perimeter defender in the NBA. Luka has immense respect for Lu Dort. You know, the one time he played him this year in a Mavericks uniform was one of Luka's worst games. It was in an NBA Cup elimination game up there in Oklahoma City. And honestly, last year during the playoffs, Luka had a couple of games in that series, but the Thunder succeeded in their mission of containing Luka and Kyrie. Those guys averaged about 40 a game combined during that series after being right at 60 for the regular season. And they did it. They said, we'll live with P.J. Washington and Derrick Jones Jr. Well, P.J. Washington in particular and Derrick Jones Jr. late in that series, you know, they made the open shots that were presented to them because there was so much attention on Luka especially and also Kyrie. So, I won't knee-jerk too much in terms of saying, oh, this shows us OKC's frauds, because I don't believe that.
Right, right, right.
However, you know, Luka is getting his legs under him. I think he's gotten through kind of the emotional processing of just mm-hmm. the shocking trade and, you know, honestly just being broken up with and shamed on his way out by the Mavericks organization. And when the guy was in the process of closing on his forever home in Dallas, like, the man lost his earnest money. Not that he can't afford it, but that shows right, you just right. how there was no question. Was he going to sign the Supermax? Hell yeah, he was signing the Supermax this summer.
yeah. You're not passing up that money. Even if you want to get out, you're not passing up that money.
But he didn't want out. Now, right. he might have wanted Nico out. That relationship had frayed. Luka didn't want to leave Dallas, though. And you know, you see the joy starting to come back. And Luka operates at emotional extremes.
Yes.
Ain't no even keel with Luka.
He's either brooding or he's doing the finger guns, not the Ja Morant finger guns, but the real finger guns.
Like, he is either smiling or snarling. There ain't no in between.
Yeah, there's no middle ground with him. When we come back, we're gonna talk to Tim about what's gonna happen Wednesday when the Lakers march into Dallas for the Mavericks' first ever away game in Dallas. Back here on The Good Word with my man Tim McMahon. Tim, we are both going to be in Dallas for Luka Doncic's first game back in Dallas since being traded. I want to break this down because reading from the book, the amazing amount of detail of everything leading up into the trade and some of the stuff that we knew in the subsequent reporting, but just what is the number one thing that has stuck out to you since you processed this whole thing, just beyond the trade itself? Is it the secretive nature of how it was done, the fact that they didn't engage other teams, that Dallas only zeroed in on the Lakers and Anthony Davis, or is it the way that the relationship seemingly had frayed leading up to it with the conditioning and the poor habits and everything else that Dallas seemed to believe, no matter what he does, he won't be able to lead you to long-term sustainable success?
Yeah, I think it was the fraying of the relationships. And especially, look, this was Nico Harrison's decision first and foremost. Mm-hmm. You know, he managed up. I don't think Jason Kidd was like throwing himself in front of the bus to stop it.
Right.
But this was a Nico decision. And the fraying of the relationship between Nico and Luka, I don't think this trade happens unless that happens. And Nico, honestly, was pretty aggressive in making some personnel decisions with support staff that were going to alienate Luka. You know, when you fired Casey Smith, maybe the most respected person in the league, in the athletic trainer community, a huge part of the fabric of the organization, a huge part of the inner circle group that helped Luka make this massive cultural transition from a European team to a, you know, to the NBA and that life, not just Dallas, but the NBA.
Right.
You were risking some things, and that happened in August 2023. And honestly, when it happened, I was like, this is going to be a deal. But I didn't want to overreact in the moment. I want to kind of see how it developed.
Right.
And then they went to the finals, but that's all part of this. You fire Casey Smith, who, by the way, the Knicks hired when his contract ran out after sitting out a year. Jalen Brunson respected him just as much as Luka did.
Right.
Just as much as Dirk, one of Casey's best friends, did. Just as much as Jason Kidd did, and so on down the list. You fire Jeremy Holsapple, Casey Spangler. Again, not household names, a strength coach, a massage therapist, but people that Luka didn't just like.
He trusted.
He respected. He trusted. They were his people. And when you replace Luka's guys, people that predated him with the organization and were with him the whole time, with Nico's guys, there's going to be tension and there's going to be breakdowns in communication. And it became very much Luka and his body team operating in kind of their own orb and you know, the Mavericks and the health and performance staff and Nico put together kind of being put on a need to know basis. And, you know, I don't think Nico appreciated that. a man who's used to a corporate power structure, yes. Corporate ladder. But I think we all understand that the NBA is not your typical corporate office.
No, right? No.
And then obviously the other thing that happened here is Mark Cuban gave up the majority share of the franchise. Mm-hmm. He told everybody who would listen that he was keeping control of basketball operations. Whether he actually believed that or was trying to speak it into existence, depends on, I don't know. He insists there was a gentleman's agreement that wasn't followed up on. Whatever the case may be, it didn't happen. It wasn't in writing. And as soon as the ink was dry on his deal with the Adelson and Dumont family, Cuban lost all juice. Mm-hmm. Cuban has no more say on things with the Dallas Mavericks than any other rich dude who sits courtside. And if Cuban's in control, there's a 0% chance that trading Luka would ever have been remotely considered under these circumstances. Only if Luka came to them and basically said, I want out, trade me or lose me for nothing. It's the only way. And Cuban still would have gone kicking and screaming. But Nico didn't have to run it by Cuban. He managed up to Patrick Dumont, a guy who did not seek Cuban's opinion or advice on the matter. Dumont and Cuban didn't have a discussion until after the deal was done. And at that point, there ain't a whole lot to talk about. It's about a 2-minute chit chat. Nico gave Cuban about a 5-minute heads up. The train was too far down the tracks.
Right.
Cuban could do about it. And then that was intentional. He didn't want Cuban involved, just like he didn't want Bill Duffy, Luka's agent, to have any sort of say. Nico was allowed to operate in silence, despite the fact that I think reasonably you look at the way things went down. How could you maximize the return for a generational talent if you're only negotiating with one team and operating in silence? In fact, Pelinka was able to use that against you in negotiations. Well, little old mom and pop Lakers, we don't know if
we don't know if Luka's going to be able to re-sign with us. He may go somewhere else.
I mean, does he like sunshine? I don't know. Does he want to play for the most glamorous franchise? And, the Lakers have always had so much trouble keeping talent they wanted to keep. So I think it was, the frayed relationships were definitely a factor in a very flawed process of trading this guy.
I will say this, and this is not to grant bail. I will say if you've made the decision to trade Luka Doncic, not that I agree with it, Tim, because I didn't, but if you make the decision to trade Luka Doncic, there is the right way to do the wrong thing kind of thing, or do the wrong thing right. I don't disagree with Nico saying, if I open this up to the entire league, I'm not going to get the best return because the agent, Bill Duffy, is very experienced in this, and he's going to steer Luka to wherever you're going to go, and you're not going to get the best return anyway. I understood that element of it, and I do think there was, I will say this, and once again, I'm sounding like Nico Harrison's like biographer myself, but I'm not.
I've been accused of being Nico's mouthpiece, so you go ahead and take that torch from me.
There we go. No, I take it from you, but I will say that Nico was able to turn around the team personnel-wise in a pretty short time, building around Luka, so I could understand if he had the confidence to say, if I did it with Luka, I can do it using Luka as a trade piece, like the P.J. Washington deal, Daniel Gafford tanking to get Lively, getting Kyrie when Kyrie was toxic, viewed as toxic around the NBA. Like, he's competent in building around it. Granted, Luka affords you a level of grace because he's so great, but there was competence there. You know what I mean? Like, I didn't agree with the deal, but I understood him having confidence that he could flip it.
Well, and there's a lot here. One, he didn't just decide he was trading Luka. He decided he was trading for Anthony Davis, for his guy, for a guy who, other than Kobe, as a Nike executive, Nico probably had a closer relationship to AD than anybody else. So that was absolutely part of the equation. And listen, man, it's kind of like, other than that, how'd you like to play Mrs. Lincoln? Right? But like, you have to, if you evaluate Nico from the start of his run as GM, which it's always murky when he's operating under Cuban because Cuban's the GM and you're just kind of his assistant. But if you operate it from that point until February 1st this year, right? Like, you have to say it was a successful tenure for all the reasons you just laid out. Like, there was some twists and turns. And in saying that, I put the blame for the Brunson bungling on Cuban.
That's a Cuban, that to me, that's a Cuban thing, because Nico walked into that situation that was already, that, like you said, that train was already headed down the tracks of that being a fractured relationship before he got there.
And Cuban didn't want to extend him when he could have before that season, when he could have, when the Brunsons went back to him in early January. And once you don't do that, you know, all the moves you just laid out over the previous 2 years that ended up, you built this championship, or not Western Conference championship, a contender, finals team around Luka. And in doing so, you gave up your first round capital, either in swaps or outright, in 27, 28, 29, and 30. And so then you turn around and trade Luka before the very next deadline to create, by Nico's own words, a 3 to 4 year time frame. Well, do the math. Wait, so right when this time frame ends, your credit card bill comes due with all the picks?
And you have nothing. And you have no way.
It's an illogical decision. Now, the other thing is, Nico's clearly betting that Luka's body's going to break down in his prime. That's clear as day. I still think the fear of the Supermax is backwards thinking. If you want to trade this guy, the Supermax is your best weapon. And I say that because, okay, you got to live with him for the next year and a half. Maybe you go back to a finals or two, maybe you don't. But you Supermax him this summer, and then you can't trade him for another year. But then he's probably got a player option on him. He's locked up for 4 years. I don't care what he says, what Bill Duffy says, you know, what Aaron Goodwin said or Damian Lillard said. If the guy's locked up for 4 years, they don't have say over, you know, what the market bears in terms of the trade discussion. Damian Lillard had MIA is the one team on his list. He ended up in MIL. It's a long one letter and a long way away, brother. And my point is, at that point, you announce to the NBA at the end of next season, if you still feel the same way, we are trading this generational talent who's in his prime right now to the highest bidder. It's the biggest bidding war in NBA history. Well, what if he suffers a serious injury this season or next season? I would point you to what Kevin Durant got, when Brooklyn traded him when he was well into his 30s, by the way.
Off an Achilles, off of an MCL, off of a Liz Frank. Three damn near career killers, and they still got a haul of first round picks.
There was a massive market for Luka regardless, but you did not maximize the return. And that's I've talked to a lot of people throughout the league on this, and there's two camps. The majority camp is you just can't trade that kind of generational talent at that age. Right. Without the proverbial gun to your head. Just can't do it. There is a minority group that says, I understand wanting to get out of the Luka business. Because look, the intel is what the intel is. Like, we've all heard it for years. It's always followed with, but you have to maximize the return. The Mavericks didn't. And the way that Nico went about it, it guaranteed that they couldn't.
Well, here's the thing. Whenever you're trading the best player, you're going to lose the trade anyway, or at least in terms of public perception. You're not trading a superstar and getting better or getting better in the eyes of the public. That's just not how it's going to work. Now, Tim Wednesday, it's going to be a very fascinating scene. Like, I'm just going just for the spectacle of it. What do you expect to see Wednesday? Like, we won't get a chance to talk to the Lakers in pregame or shoot around because they'll be coming off the back-to-back in Oklahoma City. So there will be very little time for Luka to really sort of get seeped into the acclimation of Dallas, because he'll just be coming off that back-to-back. But what type of scene do you expect to see? How angry do you expect Dallas to be?
I mean, it's going to be surreal, and obviously there's been a ton of anger and agony since the trade. A lot of that has turned into apathy. Like, if you look around, there's more empty seats at Mavericks games than there's been since at least before Luka's time, when the Mavericks had kind of drifted into irrelevancy. But it's going to be surreal, because I think it'll be in some ways a celebration of Luka's 6.5 year run in Dallas, which, I mean, it was a spectacular run. It's a lot of twists and turns, but man, what a 6.5 year run it was. Like, this is, you know, one of the most entertaining, talented players in the history of the league. Certainly the most entertaining and talented player in the history of the franchise.
Absolutely.
And then it's going to be the mourning that it wasn't a whole lot more than that, that they didn't get, you know, I don't know how long Luka plays, 15, 18, however many years, that was cut short. And in the minds of Mavericks fans, and I think reasonably so, cut short unnecessarily. You won't see.
There's Nico a feeling Harris. Of betrayal. Not that you mentioned betrayal from Luka and Nico. I feel like Dallas fans feel like they've been betrayed from the inside.
Right. And you know, so much of this, like the culture of the Mavericks and the culture of the fan base, it's about Dirk. And it's about 21 years, one uniform, you know, just unflinching loyalty.
Yeah.
You know, being able to follow his entire career arc. He did get to the top of the mountain. It's about that statue that sits in the plaza right off the Nowitzki Way outside the arena. Loyalty never fades away. That's the inscription on that. And this was a trade that absolutely flew in the face of that loyalty. And frankly, you know, so was going all the way back again to the firing of Casey Smith. Dirk Nowitzki's not been involved in the inner workings of the Mavericks franchise since that happened. That's not a coincidence.
Dude, you know, Dirk, I saw Luka's first game in L.A. Dirk was there. Like, I was in L.A. I flew to L.A. That was the trade, you know, right after the trade had happened, and Luka wasn't playing, and then he played. And Dirk was there. Like, Dirk is a dude who swept the Lakers out of the playoffs. So he's been an enemy of the Lakers, and yet he was there almost as proxy. It was like an endorsement of Luka and not an endorsement of the trade. Like,
it was 1,000%. An endorsement of Luka and a support for Luka. And he, like, listen, you know, Luka's got his flaws. And honestly, the year they played together, you know, it would have been great if Luka would have maybe learned a little bit more from Dirk in terms of the diet, the condition, even like being a face of the franchise. But Dirk loves the guy, loved him as a kid. Just Luka's confidence as a teenager would crack Dirk up. And Dirk felt betrayed by this trade. Dirk felt backstabbed. You know, for Dirk to find out, I think I forgot where he said he was, but he was overseas, maybe back in Germany. But, you know, it's the, you know, he's about to go to lunch where he was, and he just sat in his hotel room just trying to process the whole thing because he felt like he was stabbed in the back. This trade ran counter to everything that Dirk was about. And for all the doubts Nico had, frankly, even Jay Kidd had, in terms of Luka being a guy you could rely on as a face of the franchise, Dirk never, ever had a single shred of a doubt from the time, honestly, from very early in Luka's rookie year all the way through. Like, Dirk is a full-blown Luka believer. And for Dirk to get on a commercial aircraft and fly to Los Angeles.
Yep.
After, by the way, he wasn't there February 8th when AD made his debut, when, boy, would it have eased some things if Dirk's sitting there courtside.
That's a great point.
Dirk's not bailing out the Mavericks franchise. That, honestly, has alienated him over the last couple of years as well. And he said it, he'll be a Mavericks fan, but he's not involved in the franchise, and he's always going to have Luka's back. And he knew exactly what the visuals were of him showing up and being there in Los Angeles. By the way, right to his side, Scott Tomlin, another person who was part of that inner circle group with Luka a long time, VP of communications for the Mavericks. And he left to work as the executive director of the Dirk Nowitzki Foundation very soon after Casey Smith was run off. That's not a coincidence.
That's culture. I think the word that we're sort of dancing around here is culture. Nico Harrison has his view of culture, and Mavericks culture was something totally different. Now, granted, Mavericks culture hasn't always been the most positive thing in the world when you consider Mark Cuban's history and everything else. But I get your point about how invested players feel into franchises and how you want that connective tissue. And clearly that connective tissue has been broken. We got one more segment with my man McMahon before we send him on his way, before I have to go to Dallas and beat him up a little bit. It's time for the last word here with Tim McMahon. Tim, I'm looking at the Western Conference, and this is your backyard, and I see every team from 5 to 8 separated by a win. Like, the Nuggets are 5th, but if you look at it for all the tiebreakers and everything else, or 4th, rather, the Nuggets are 4th, excuse me, and for all intents and purposes, they're 8th, because everybody there is 46-32. Clippers, who we haven't talked enough about. Warriors, Minnesota, Memphis, who for whatever reason we seem to talk about, and it's never about basketball. Mm-hmm. Is this a case where the matchups will determine who gets out, as opposed to there are better teams just with similar records? Like, I look at Houston beating Golden State. Like, their length is something in athleticism gives Golden State problems, but it didn't bother the Lakers a few nights ago. Golden State's shooting and versatility on the perimeter, that bothers the Lakers in ways that other teams don't have that problem. Like, how do we see this regular season playing out in sort of, like, how do you handicap, I guess, those teams in that logjam?
Well, and I mean, the Lakers have kind of been able to poke their heads above the fray, but they're only a game and a half above the Nuggets. They're sitting 3rd, and the Nuggets are 4th. And as you said, the Nuggets are a half game ahead of a 4-team tie. I mean, it is really 3 through 8 is packed. How about the Houston Rockets? Who would have thought they'd be securing the second seed, you know, without a clear number one offensive option? And then obviously, look, Oklahoma City is very clearly the strong favorite to come out of the Western Conference. But it ain't going to be easy. And yeah, I do think it's going to be a lot about matchups. Obviously, health's always a factor. Like, okay, Jamal Murray. That's awfully concerning, because if he ain't right, the Nuggets aren't lasting long, as great as Joker is. You know, Kawhi is right. He just played a back-to-back for the first time all year. And, you know, as you said, the Clippers, they're playing damn good basketball. So, you know, health, matchups, and then, like, who gets hot? And not necessarily with stars, right? Like, last year for the Mavericks, P.J. Washington got hot at the right time. The Mavericks are able to get through Oklahoma City. If he doesn't have a great series, you know, the OKC very well could have come out of the Western Conference. So it's going to be fascinating. Honestly, this is one of those years where 9-10, I mean, you got to play the games, but, like,
yeah.
You know, I don't know that the 9-10 part of the play is really necessary right now. You know, obviously if Kyrie didn't go down, then the Mavericks very well could have been a factor, but he did, and they're not.
Tim, I was fascinated to see if AD was healthy, and I know people are losing their minds and everything else. If AD is healthy, if Kyrie doesn't tear his – I wanted to see what that looked like. I wanted to see AD and Derek Lively terrorize people on the back line of a defense. Like, I was fascinated. Like, I understood you don't trade Luka Doncic, but spinning it forward, I was like, wait a minute, let's see if we got something here.
And no, they were absolutely –
we don't have anything.
Yeah, the healthy version of the Dallas Mavericks, which we never saw after the trade, the healthy version of the Dallas Mavericks was going to be a threat, could have been a threat. But we never saw it, and it remains to be seen if we ever do. Unfortunately, Kyrie coming off an ACL obviously puts, you know, next season in some jeopardy as well.
Yep.
But again, you're shortening the time frame to give up a generational talent as prime. We've had that conversation. The West playoffs, though, are going to be fascinating.
It's going to be a bloodbath.
Whoever ends up in the 8th seed is going to be a damn good team. Like, Oklahoma City is going to have probably the best point differential in NBA history and a fight on their hands in the first round.
Is there a team that you don't believe in? Like, is there a team that you look at and you're like, okay, your record is your record. You're going to get into the playoffs. We're going to assume you're going to get in. But I just don't believe in you as an outfit for whatever reason. Or there's a team that you don't believe in as much as you believe in others. Not that you don't believe in them at all, but you just believe in Team X, Team Y, Team Z over you.
So I want to be careful with the context here.
Yeah.
Because I think the Rockets are on the path towards long-term contention, right? And Ime Udoka deserves
He should get more Coach of the Year love. He should get a lot more.
He deserves to be in the conversation with Jess Business, Bickerstaff, and Kenny Atkinson. To me, those are the three guys that would be, I don't have a ballot, but those are the three who would be on
you
my
don't,
ballot.
You don't have a ballot?
Nah, man, the NBA is a bunch of haters. That's okay. Honestly, there are times I'm like, glad I don't, because I don't want to, you know, I don't want to hear anybody's, I don't want to, like last year, for example, Luka's an MVP candidate. I would have voted for Joker. It would have been a thing. I didn't need all that.
Yeah.
So anyways, I think the Rockets, and I'm gonna have a story on this early in the playoffs. I think, and frankly, the Rockets think, they are a legitimate superstar away from being a real deal championship contender. Now, the question is that superstar going to be homegrown? You know, one of the guys they already have?
Amen Thompson.
Yeah.
That's the guy. If you don't get a guy, that's the guy.
But also by superstar, I mean that offensive engine.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
That guy who, hey, there's 3 minutes left in a one possession playoff game. You're running stuff through this guy. That's what they don't have. Can it be Amen Thompson? Can it be Jalen Green? Can it be Şengün? Reed Shepard's not even in the rotation.
Right.
They'll tell you he might be their most talented offensive player. They still think he can be a Steve Nash type of guy where he didn't play a lot early, but he ends up having a hell of a career.
Wow.
So can it be homegrown, or do they need to take that swing in the trade market? Does it make sense for them to take a swing on a guy like Kevin Durant, who there's a define? Obviously, you're not doing that for 5 or 6 years. You're doing that for 2 or 3.
Mm-hmm.
Does that make sense? And these playoffs, and again, I've talked to people in Houston about this. There, it's going to be great experience for this young group, and it's going to be a great evaluation tool for them. But their hope is very much that they can just keep this young core and let it grow. Now, if they decide they need to take a swing in the trade market, boy, oh boy, do they have assets.
Yes,
they won't take a desperate swing, I can tell you that. It'll be very measured. And if they don't feel like there's a real needle mover, they're not going to take a swing just to throw a punch. But I do think they are that offensive engine away. And maybe, you know, Thompson's fascinating. He's going to be a star. He's an ascending star right now. Is he more in the Draymond mold in terms of like kind of like Draymond's a Hall of Famer, but he's a complimentary piece, core piece. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
Like his impact is dominant defender, yes. Offensive connector, you know, or can Thompson be that dominant defender? And I had somebody there ask me, what do you think Russell Westbrook could do at his peak that this kid doesn't have a chance to do? And that question made me kind of lift my eyebrows and say, that's interesting.
So, I will say this about that. Russell Westbrook was not going to be the best player on a championship team.
And that's, that ended up being proven to be accurate. And if Thompson's going to be the guy who's got the ball in his hands the majority of the time, I think you've got to make sure you're fitting the roster around him specifically. You're surrounding him with shooting. But we've seen little glimpses. Hey, game's on the line against the defending champions in Boston. Here's the Rock. Go make something happen. And he jukes Jaylen Brown out of his shorts and hits that little floater. It's like, okay. I think Thompson's the best bet, but he's not the only bet they have in terms of that type of – like Jalen Green is an interesting player. You know, he's not shown consistency. He's not shown consistent efficiency. But, man, the kid's got some talent, and he plays. He doesn't miss game. He has not missed a game under Ime Udoka. There's something to be said for that.
None of those dudes are missing games under Ime Udoka. That dude will fight. I don't mean like literally fight.
Well, that too.
Yeah.
If you want to throw down, he'll throw down now.
I'm really fascinated. I don't think Kevin Durant is going there. I think Kevin Durant has his bags packed east. I'm not going to say where. I just think he's going east this summer. How far east? We'll see.
But you going to get a bite of the apple?
No. I don't think he's going there.
Wouldn't rule that one out either.
I think I would put them second. Okay. I would not put them first. But that, ladies and gentlemen, is my man Tim McMahon of ESPN and author of Wonder Boy, Luka Doncic, and the Curse of Greatness. My man, I really, really appreciate you, brother.
Hey, man, I appreciate you having me. I can't say I'm looking forward to seeing you when you get here to Dallas, but I'm going to be seeing you a lot come playoff time. And you know what? I ain't going to lie. It's always good to see you. I am.
There we go. See, I knew you would come around and welcome me with open arms. Thanks, my man. I really appreciate you. Thanks to producer Dakota and the entire team that worked so hard behind the scenes on this show. I'll be back Wednesday from Dallas, Texas for another episode of The Good Word. Until then, everybody be safe.